Akron, Ohio. This is episode 210 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking docs. We're going to talk about... We were saying, like, we want to do a little bit more reviews, so we got the jar. We're doing that every...
month.
Yeah, like, once a month, we're going to do some jar talk. And then we also want to do, like, roundtable discussions. We're going to have, like, a bigger, like, not necessarily trope-centric topic, but obviously the tropes always tie in, and we'll get to some of those tropes about a bigger topic.
Is it okay that our table's not round that we're talking at?
Square table discussion.
Yeah. Rectangular.
Not even a square. I know what a square is. This is not it. This is a rectangle. Whatever.
Thank you, doctor.
Parallelogram-shaped table.
Rhombus?
All rectangles are rhombus. No, squares are rhombuses.
All squares are rectangles. Rhombuses, I think, can't have 90-degree angles, but parallelograms.
Rhombus has four equal sides, so a square is a rhombus because it has four equal sides.
Oh, I thought a lot about squares.
Anyway.
A square is a rectangle because it has all right angles.
Yeah.
I'm square.
And Kyle.
I'm Eva.
Okay, well, we're really... just going off the rails. So I wrote down like a few questions just to
yeah,
like we're gonna do this like the McLaughlin group, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, you guys remember the McLaughlin group?
I remember the SNL sketch.
Yeah. I have to be Eleanor Clift, huh?
I don't know who that is, but yes,
the chick.
Okay. Then yes, what, like, my main question for this is, like, what is it that separates a documentary from, and specifically like talking head documentaries where it's just cutting back and forth between people talking, what makes that art or a movie or a TV show and a news segment, like a 60 minutes segment, not? Like, is it just the format, or is there something about the documentary style and the way they use it or the way they cut it together, the types of stories that they're telling? What is it that makes a documentary and more than just news special?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on this. However, I'm also wondering, like, well, Kyle, you went to film school.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
Yeah. I feel like this is your question.
Well, it sounds like it would be different classes.
I thought he was going to ask, like, what's the difference between a documentary and like just a straight up film. I don't watch a ton of news, but my immediate answer was just that documentaries, they're kind of made like in the editing room, and their responses that they're getting from the people that they're talking to, they're not scripted at all. They're all in the moment. They're all from the heart. And I guess that would be one thing with the news, is a lot of it's scripted. Maybe not like the breaking news things where they're talking like off the cuff, but
with the anchors or
which I mean,
but like when they used to, I guess they don't really do it so much anymore, but there used to be like news segments like the investigative reporter.
Yeah,
like I don't think that there is much of a difference other than like where you view it.
Yeah,
or the time involved in preparing it.
Mm-hmm. I really thought he was going to be asking what the difference between a documentary and like a film are, like fiction and nonfiction. But
I think that to me, it's what you said, Kyle, that there's editing.
Yeah.
And that there's editing in a way to create specifically what makes it art. That's to me what makes it art, is there's like editing and there's staging to create a setting and to create an image and to create a message. Whereas the purpose of news is to show what's there. I mean, I really wish I could remember who said it yet. It was something just recently I watched, and they were talking about how documentaries are staged.
Like, oh, of course.
If we, you know, this idea that we are seeing like live
pure
cinema veritas, you know, like what's actually happening, isn't really the case, that all documentaries are essentially staged. You show up and you are talking with people who are experiencing something, and you're saying, now you're going to do it on camera
while I watch you.
it's staging, it's production. So I think,
but
that's just
a type though. Like, not all documentaries have the talking heads, and they are just cuts of showing.
Well, yeah, I guess I agree with that. I think that it's either way, it's still different from a news show because it's actually constructed.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes the difference. It's actually prepared. It's And there's more artificial, there's more artifice in the documentary. I think by nature, a news show, even the breaking news stuff, or like the investigative report, is supposed to be showing as close to reality as it can.
I think that, I know that that's kind of where I was at with it too, that there's less of a motivation to like create a story. However, I think in practicality, a lot of it is kind of the same, especially when you have those like special, it's not a thing of saying what happened today. This is a reporter for the news who has been working on this story for some length of time and has now prepared it to show, or like 60 minutes where those are segments that are.
Well, yeah. And I think you're talking about something that is, I don't even know if it's as prevalent now.
It kind of isn't. Well, it's like CBS Sunday.
That I watch that has a bunch of those. Like they're those old school. What you just said, like where a reporter would actually say, "This is the story I'm working on," and they create
An
entire production essentially.
That's kind of. I mean, to me, that's not any different from a documentary.
Yeah, film. I don't know. I don't know that would be that different.
I knew somebody who lived someplace that was destroyed by a tornado when he was a kid, and the next morning, outside there were news vans from all of the major TV stations in Cleveland, and they were arranging the debris in people's yards to make it look like, I guess, dramatic enough for them to stand in front of and shoot. And there's all those, like, you know, where somebody's acting like they're in a little boat and somebody walks behind them and the water's only like knee high.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing I just said about it being the difference being it being staged. I mean, modern news tells us that the news is staged as well. Yeah. I think that the intent, maybe.
That's one thing that I was going
to
say.
It's supposed to be that it is real, even though there is clearly this like illusion involved, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like, at least to me, the way a lot of news is presented is it's mostly there to inform you. And a documentary, I think, is trying to inform you of the literal facts, but all of the good documentaries are also saying something more universal, other than just like what the thing is about.
There's a theme.
Yeah, there's...
Or a side that most of them take.
Yeah, like a lot of them will take sides, a lot of them won't, but they're all, or at least the ones that have like a narrative story, and I guess we can talk about concert films separately, because those, not as much, but all of them are trying to say something. So like Burden of Dreams, it's not just talking literally about Werner Herzog trying to make this movie, but it's also about, you know, obsession. It's saying, I think, maybe more about obsession than Fitzcarraldo was saying about
Jodorowsky's
obsession.
Dune is not so much about Jodorowsky's Dune. Yeah. It's about trying to bring an artistic vision to completion.
Right, yeah. So it is telling you a lot about this production that they wanted to do, and but it's also telling you about Jodorowsky and who he is and what it's like to try to produce something, and what it's like when you spend all this time and you have gotten yourself on a path that you think is going to be groundbreaking, and then how it is when something like that fails. So it's not just about the movie itself, it's about something bigger. And I feel like news stories aren't really doing that. They're like, here is X, and this is what X is about, whereas the documentary is, it has loftier...
There's an artistic component, there's a metaphoric or a poetic...
Yeah, it has layer loftier to it. Goals.
Yeah, whereas I do think that the intent of news is always to inform, even if it's couched in a artistic kind of has artistic layers and elements. I think it is still, the intent is probably to try to inform. I mean, you mentioned I don't think all news necessarily, or it's clearly all anything that calls itself news is not necessarily news. I'm thinking about Fox News right now.
Yeah, that's
that, like, because they is, maybe I should look it up on Snopes. It was my understanding that they're not able to actually call themselves a news station. Is that real?
They call themselves entertainers.
Yeah, I think they have to, though. That's what I...
It probably keeps them out of some kind of, like, libel law or something. To
classify their content as that, because it doesn't qualify as actual news, maybe, intent. Yeah. I mean, literally, like, during the impeachment trial, they were showing clips of Jerry Lewis. I swear to God. Like, I'm not kidding. I turned it on, and it was just Jerry Lewis. And I was like, oh my God.
I mean, probably not the worst use of their time, honestly. I mean, considering what they do with the rest of their day.
So when we talk about Not just that, but I think a better example of that is like what Eva was saying about how these news people were organizing debris to make it look more dramatic. I think in a news format, that's kind of shady and inappropriate. But if a documentary filmmaker does that, is that something that we think is okay for, like, how much artistic license are we allowing them to lie or create things that are a little bit fabricated?
I'm thinking about like a film, like, okay, say I'm a documentary filmmaker and I'm making something about these people's lives. When I show up with the camera and I say, tell me what happened yesterday, and they start telling me what happened yesterday, that's an artifice. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there to film it when it happened.
Yeah.
I'm filming them telling me what happened. That's not, you know, like a pure document of what happened. This is a filtered through this person telling me what happened.
Yeah, there's a little bit of fiction.
It doesn't seem wrong or inaccurate or I think hard to believe.
There's fiction in that they wouldn't be saying that if
exactly.
the camera wasn't in front of
them. Exactly. Right.
I do think though we have the same reaction as the audience, and I don't really have a judgment on that. I just know that either way, I think that reaction of the audience to that kind of thing is bad. I think it's a sense of trust is lost, or like we see that as kind of shady. Like the idea that
there seems to be a spectrum for it, or a continuum for it.
Like even if we could agree that okay, a documentary wants to present a certain image and they want to try to tell their story. Anytime we've heard of that kind of thing, I think there's been skepticism. Mm-hmm. You know.
So what about? And I'm going to use another Herzog example. So I watched a documentary about documentaries called Capturing Reality, and they interview a handful, like a couple dozen documentarians. They show clips of their footage and they talk about the format itself, and it's a little bit dry. It's not that groundbreaking, but it's interesting enough at least. And they mentioned this one scene from a Herzog documentary called Little Dieter Needs to Fly, which if you've seen Rescue Dawn, Dieter is the Christian Bale character. So he was a POW in the Vietnam War. He was tortured, blah, 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 came back home. And it's about Little Dieter Needs to Fly is about him now. And something that he does is when he opens and closes doors, he does it a few times. And he says that Dieter says that it's supposed to be like, since he was a prisoner of war, it's just so that he feels more comfortable knowing that he can get out. And it's a really interesting character moment. But it was bullshit. Like Herzog just made him, he's like, oh, you know, it'd be cool. Like if you do this, it'll say a little bit more about you. And some of the documentarians, they mention it. One of the documentarians is like, that's a lie. And I think that's totally wrong. And other people said, you know, it's not literally true. It's not the truth, but it gets to a bigger truth. Like a metaphorical, or what Herzog calls the ecstatic truth, which is like his way of saying like this metaphorical truth rather than something that actually happened or something that he actually does. And do we find that permissible?
No.
Kind of not.
I think it's okay for something like that. And I think there's...
Well, what about, let's use an example from, you know, let's bring some dead animals into this. One of the Mondo Kane films where they're showing the sea turtles. Mm-hmm. And it's believed that when they were filming this, in order to create a more dramatic image of these little baby sea turtles dying, they started turning them around, keeping them out of the water so they could film them longer.
See that?
What about the lemmings? Only reason we think that lemmings would jump over like the edge of a waterfall is because they were, it's like a 50s image.
It was a Disney film, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're throwing them over the side.
Mm-hmm. Now, does that speak to a larger, does that get a different message?
And I'll say to you, I think that it's, I think it is disingenuous because I think that it's a, when you're watching a character, me as the audience, I want to know who that person is. Mm-hmm. This idea that Herzog has this idea of truth, this ecstatic truth that he's trying to show me, I don't share that with him. Mm-hmm. I don't share that.
He can make that in a film.
And he can make that in a film. I have an opportunity now for him to introduce me to a person, into a real experience. So for him to fake that is cheapened it, especially considering what people who actually have been tortured and what that guy probably actually did
went through.
Yeah. Like it's, and how he did express it. That that would have been more interesting.
Yeah. Like me. Why would he need to make that quirk of his?
So I think and it's an interesting,
I just think, you know, you, to quote, I'm originally a poet. That was my first thing. And to quote another poet, I always tell the truth, even when I lie. Quoting the great Tony Montana. And that's that to me, like, that's art. That should be art. Like, you are still trying to tell a truth, yet I think that when you start to fabricate things like that, especially that take away from a real experience, that's when it really goes
It's one wrong. Thing to edit something into a message that you're trying to get across. It's
like, I get it. I do get what he's
going for,
thinking that he's doing it. I think that's very,
I think that example is interesting though, because he's not doing anything that really changes the narrative at all. It's just a little quirk.
Except for the narrative that he's a person who does that thing.
Yeah, but I mean, in the scope of the movie,
it's not contrary to any of the other things.
It's 5 seconds. It doesn't negate any of
it. But if it's only 5 seconds, why does he need to do it?
Exactly.
And then a movie is made up of 5 seconds at a time. You know, it's still a moment. That's, I think, my thing.
And if it isn't that consequential, why do it at all?
I mean, it's an interesting point. I don't have a problem with that example, but I do think that it's a slippery slope, and you could take it further to an extreme where it's like it's unequivocally bad.
So you do think that what he did was wrong. You just don't think that he should necessarily be removed from the film. I'm just Lamar Alexander joke.
Oh,
you just don't want to be the one who holds him accountable for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I really don't have a problem with that because it doesn't really.
Well, my question then is, what would be? Because you said that's an example you don't think is as bad.
Mm.
What would be a thing that's too far?
I don't know. Like if he were to suddenly go to doctors, like if he started receiving medical treatment that he doesn't need, like that's clearly too far. For
that's what you mean about like there being certain elements of like staging. I guess I do wonder about. I would draw the line at a person's traits and like
Well, and it's one thing if that was an activity that he did. If that was a motion that he did, he just didn't do it that day. And if he said, hey, could you do that thing with the door again that I saw you do yesterday or that you did, and you did it so that you could film it.
Yeah.
Kind of artificial because he didn't naturally do it that day. However, not something that he wouldn't have done on a different.
I would be totally fine with that one. I guess that's one thing that bothers me about is that he actually makes up a symptom of PTSD. Whereas that guy probably had enough. And people have enough symptoms of PTSD that it almost feels like it, I don't know.
Is unnecessary.
Yeah, and it feels kind of like an affront to those real experiences almost.
Yeah. So do you think that all, like, they should only be capturing something that's the actual truth? Or you think it is okay if, you know, the guy does that, but he didn't do it that one time and he goes, hey, can you?
See, to me, that's less offensive to me. That seems more natural to...
That, to me, is more along with the staging.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are allowing for a little bit of artifice then to an extent. Well, maybe I'm just willing to go a little bit further.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a big thing, going back to like the comparison between the newscast and documentaries, is documentaries, I think the real good ones spend so much time with their subject, like months and months and months. The news thing, sometimes it's like an afternoon, a couple hours, maybe a few minutes in a certain situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like if he was fabricating that situation with the guy and had him do it again, like if he was like really like spent time with that person, you would think he would have like captured that in a different time. Like you spend so much time with your subject that you should see everything about them and not have to like fake it. But
I guess it makes me wonder, I guess it makes me feel like it was more important for Herzog to tell his understanding of how that works more so than to show me this experience
of that person.
And that feels, as the viewer, like I was like cheated out of something.
Yeah. But it's also like, you're not ever supposed to know that he made that up. So how many other things have you seen in other movies
that are
invented that you don't know about?
Yeah.
I mean, well, even that though, like it was asked of like other documentarians, like what they thought. Did they say anything about like what, like as like reviewers, like when that came out, how did people feel about it?
I don't think people knew.
Nobody really.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd like to think that most aren't doing that, but you never know. You know,
I'm trying to think of
you can't just assume that like because Herzog did it that everyone's doing it, but you also can't think the other
way. No, I'm like trying to think of other examples that we know of.
I do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's like the Neck of the North.
No, because the North.
Yeah. Yeah.
The original.
Is that any different than somebody's doing an interview and they say, like, cut, can you say that again, but say it differently? And can you give me just a little bit more emotion? Or, like, if you feel like you're going to start crying, don't hold back.
That's the thing, is that they're still not, like, if they made up the words themselves and they said, hey, can you say this? That's the fabrication part.
Or even just telling the interviewer, can you, like, rephrase the question in your answer, like telling them how to answer it before they even answer is like kind of in swaying them in a way without even
kind of shady too.
Yeah. Which,
what about,
there's like so many different types of documentaries. It's like really interesting. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get to that. But I'm thinking of another documentary in which you don't even know what's true and what's not. And that's Exit Through the Gift Shop. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, that was on my short list, actually.
It's about Banksy and then another artist who he knows, who goes by Mr. Brainwash, like, comes to prominence. And you're not ever really sure if Mr. Brainwash is, like, real or if he's just a bit that they're doing, or if it starts as a bit and then
that movie is, like, multiple movies in one. It's kind of crazy. I really liked the beginning of it where, it felt more traditional because it was him kind of showing off like the underground of doing graffiti and street art. Mm-hmm. But then, when he started to create that character, it was a little weird. And then it ends up that it was like made by Banksy or something.
It was directed by Banksy.
The whole documentary was, or just the second half?
I think the whole documentary. So you don't even really know. And Banksy's someone who's known to be like playful with that type of
thing. But he's also like mysterious and like you don't know who he is to begin with.
So right.
You don't know who to trust.
Is that even a documentary then? If
that guy's, can you make a documentary about a fake subject?
Yeah, if that guy's just playing a character, is that really a documentary? Or there's an Orson Welles documentary called F for Fake, and it's about a guy who was a art forger and then another guy who was writing a book on him who also didn't forge but like invented, I think he was writing a biography and he like lied. So it's about the two of them. And then it also has other things of Orson Welles, like in the beginning, he's doing magic tricks, which is what that all is. And in the beginning, he says something like, we're going to tell some stories and I'll tell you the truth for the next hour. And then an hour into the movie, he tells some long story about his girlfriend and all this and that. And then he goes, actually, that was all a lie. I told you I was only going to tell the truth for an hour. And I think that's a good example of like,
Wells.
Yeah, he's just like fucking with
still you. Still a lot we don't know about him.
I think it does count as a documentary, even if there is a little bit of
like fiction
to it. Because, I mean, they are documenting a moment. And all of like that show that Mr. Brainwash puts on at the end of the movie and everyone's like into his art and buying, and like they're prepping for it.
Yeah.
And maybe he's not who he says he is and it's like a lie, but that I'm assuming that event really
to
happened.
My knowledge, those people are spending literal like tens of thousands of dollars on his shitty art.
And maybe he probably tricked them, but if he did, it's not like it makes it any less of a moment.
It's interesting though. It's a documentary about Banksy though.
Sort of.
Well, it starts out that way, and then Banksy inspires this guy to do his own thing.
He directed it.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
I mean, the question of like what makes a documentary.
Yeah,
That's what it makes me think of. I'm thinking about
I was just going to say, I love the documentaries that like open your eyes to something that you don't know anything about. Like whether it's a culture or like the history of something. That's why like I don't watch a ton of documentaries, but I'm always like, if I see a good one, I'm really inspired to just like pick up my camera and just shoot anything because you can do that with a documentary. Like you don't need to create this story before you start shooting. You can just shoot and then create a story from that. But yeah, what were you gonna say, sir?
I guess I was thinking about, I guess it's more docudrama, the film Goodbye Uncle Tom, which is essentially that was one of the words they used, the filmmakers.
I don't think they ever tried to make it seem that it could be an actual documentary because it involves time travel.
Yeah, the idea is that a film crew goes back and makes a documentary about slavery.
Yeah.
And what makes it interesting, though, is that everything from the film
is real.
Is real. Everything in that film.
There are actual documents that support those events. From
historical record. So what we're seeing on screen did happen to actual people.
A film crew could have watched it happen.
So they're recreating.
And it was, yeah, yes. It was recreated. Okay. So it's a docudrama, I guess. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah,
that's just that idea that okay, these are real events, though.
Yeah,
in recreations, I think we generally tolerate from documentaries because we're all kind of on board with, we know what this is.
I will say, oh my God, the girls are, sorry about the screaming. I will
that
say
that could go, that could be taken really the wrong way.
Hard times
in Kyle's dungeon.
I will say that the sort of dramatizations that happen in certain documentaries, I don't know if I'm as big of a fan of, just because
I usually don't like them. I have one that I like.
Yeah, mostly because there was one that I was watching the other day, and it's just a guy talking about like really interesting things that were happening to him. It's a short called Black Sheep. I don't know if you guys have seen it or heard of it.
Chris Farley movie?
Yeah, pretty much. No, it's this black family that moves into this like really racist neighborhood in London. And just he's just talking about their whole experience with it. But like, it's in an interview and he's just talking about his experience. And then they have the dramatic things about that. And I'm like, I guess that type of story, it's hard to, I mean, you would never like document, because it's not like a significant event. It's just something that happened to that particular family.
Show what happened, but other than
it just
through a reenactment.
Yeah, I guess that's mostly just the difference between whether the event is like something that is widespread or just like a very personal moment. Because you're not always going to have those documented. But yeah, I think I do like the found footage stuff more usually, just because
like archival footage.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's just more like I can not relate to it, but I can like it's more fascinating to me, I guess.
Yeah. So, what are the different formats or like versions of how are different ways that documentaries are told?
There is just the talking heads and found footage and people talking about the past and their memories of it. There's one that's going to be on my list has no talking heads and it's literally just like edited footage of something, and it's referred to as like a memoir, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's also people will call it like observational cinema or direct cinema,
and that's kind of like what I have been doing for the last few years, like with like vacations and stuff, like I'll just film and then cut the footage that I have and not like, and it's documenting like a week or a few days, but it's not like necessarily telling a story.
There's a filmmaker named, I think he's like probably 90 now, named Frederick Wiseman, who makes a lot of really long documentaries. And he does just that, where he had one from last year, a couple years ago, called Ex Libris, the New York Public Library. And it's just, I think, 4 hours of, I mean, the New York Public Library is huge. It's not like, you know, the Highland Square branch of a library where they have people come speak and they have like meetings, and the movie is just 4 hours of different things going on in the library that are cut together. But it's one of those things where he probably had hundreds of hours of footage and he managed to cut it together in a way where certain themes are coming up.
Yeah.
And he'll cross cut between things that, if you're not really paying attention, it's just like, oh, they're going back and forth, but they're actually trying to say something bigger because he managed to accrue enough footage that he could do that.
Yeah. And then there are the dramatization ones where there way more production goes into it. And then, yeah, we didn't even really get into like the difference between a documentary movie and then a series, which are all over the place now. There's crime dramas.
Oh, man, yeah.
Everything's a crime drama these
miniseries.
Days.
Yeah, the miniseries, which is a whole other like type of editing.
And those, I think, tend to very often have the reenactments because... most of the time, that's
you couldn't have been there the first time.
If you were there,
has anyone seen the Wild Wild Country? The footage in that is incredible because like
the found footage that they have.
Yeah, because they're like interviewing these people, and it's like decades later. But then they'll show them in the footage, and it's like when they were so young, and it's like so crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
another one that's good is No One Saw a Thing. It's about a there was a killing of a bully that happened in like, oh man,
Missouri.
It's Missouri, yeah. And it's like one of the most sensational and, you know, historical instances of like a vigilante killing. And it happened in like the 80s, like 85 or something like that.
Yeah.
And they kind of like do a 6-part story about the town. And they really go into like what the culture of the town was and like what other incidents happen, and I think that's where those miniseries have like really have a lot of value, because I remember that one specific incident, like there was even an Unsolved Mysteries episode of it, speaking of shows that reenactments. And having the miniseries, now you got this chance to like hear so much backstory about that space. So I think there's like a lot of value in those kinds of like expansive multi-episode documentaries, especially around issues that we have like a kind of a, just a cultural relationship with that we might remember just as one single event.
Like OJ Made in America is a fantastic documentary, and it has archival footage and it has talking heads in it. I don't think it does reenactments if I remember right, but yeah, it combines like what's one of the things that's great about that is so much of the footage that they have is stuff I've never seen before. It's like pretty jaw dropping the amount of access they had to this stuff. What do you guys think about the type of documentary like what Michael Moore does, where he's actually getting in front of the camera and he's interacting with people?
I kind of don't like those as much. I guess I tend to sometimes it's okay, but to me, like if the point is that Michael Moore is going to insert himself in these situations. And so to me,
character,
it's almost okay that he's there, but I really don't like when, and I think this happens more in like nonfiction writing maybe than in film, where I'm supposed to be learning about this subject and instead I'm learning about the writer or the filmmaker's self-discovery or how their life has changed from working on this project and like their own like life path kind of thing. It kind of
I hear you
annoys me.
Yeah, it can be a lot, especially when the presenter, like you were saying, is such a character. And especially with like somebody like that who, you know, we talked about like staging and stuff. I mean, yikes, you know, it was like his whole career. I'm thinking about like Super Size Me though, and that's like one of my favorite.
I do really examples like that. Of that.
I don't know why. Like, I like that movie.
That's different. Saying,
yeah, it's still a guy.
Well, that movie is actually like about him though.
It's supposed to be his list,
by the way.
No, it's not. Like, I
don't like that movie.
I thought about putting it on there, but I knew Nick was gonna not enjoy it. No, I like that example of it. I do think there is a big difference to me when you hear the person behind the camera like ask the question rather than like the question just being answered on on. I don't know why there's such a difference to me, but it's like,
is it bothersome to you when you hear it?
It's more just like, I don't know, like I feel like when I watch a documentary, it needs to just be about what they're talking about, like what
you
they're
don't
showing.
Hear
like
that's an artistic thing.
Yeah, it should just be the camera.
Yeah, because it takes us out of the film.
Which yeah. Michael Moore also like narrates his own documentaries, and that's a little different, and maybe a little easier to take. But
yeah, I'd rather that than hearing a guy in a muffled voice.
Well, you never hear any of the other noises associated with producing this film.
Yeah.
You don't hear like equipment moving or other people talking.
Yeah.
That stuff, if it's only like most movies will only do that once, and I kind of like it. It kind of clues you into this is important enough that they needed
we couldn't edit around this.
They needed to ask it, and it had to be done this way.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
I get. Yeah. I see what you mean about, like, yeah, incidentally, it can be really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think maybe it takes you out of the artifice of it, but also it is a documentary. Like, we should
show everything.
Like we're aware. Yeah, we're aware that it's still, like, a film. Like, I don't think you ever forget that. And some document, like, it didn't quite make my list, but it was close. Like, I thought about putting it on my list. Stories We Tell from a few years ago, the Sarah Polley documentary. It's, like, about her family. If I remember right, the movie starts with her, like, setting up the cameras and, like, putting mics on her siblings and, like, framing everything the right way. So you know, like, from the start that what you're seeing is a movie. It's not just like you're glimpsing into these people's lives. You're glimpsing something that she created.
Yeah. That sounds more like it's like the raw type. Like, they're not trying to make it pretty. Like, they're just showing what happened that day when they were interviewing.
I just have a quote pulled from that documentary that I was talking about called Capturing Reality, where Errol Morris, who's a famous documentarian, says, what documentary filmmaking is quote, creating a story where there is no story.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, these are just things that are happening, and whether or not they're dramatic or not, the documentarian is the one who's like picking up the torch to actually do
present
this.
It.
Yeah.
I
so
guess.
I've got another quote.
Maybe there's a genre of documentary that is that.
Yeah.
Because I think that there are some... I'm just looking over my list. I'm sure you guys have a lot, too, where there are plenty of documentaries that where the story was there.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, there is...
It had an event.
Yeah. And that's what he's saying is maybe more true to his story. So he... Mm-hmm. Like, he did a movie called Vernon, Florida. It's just an hour long, and it's just... He went down to Florida and got people in front of a camera, and he's like, all right, just talk.
And one of the ones that I picked for mine is that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's just, is it another one of his?
No.
You know, the whole talking head thing we were talking about, like, that's, to me, that's compelling.
Yeah.
I've been watching this guy, David Hoffman, on YouTube. He's actually, like, a long time...
He's been a documentary
decade
for,
long,
like,
yeah,
50, 60
PBS
years.
PBS documentarian. So he has a YouTube channel out now where he's basically just releasing...
All kinds of old footage.
They're like interviews, though. They're like,
most
it's
of them
mostly
are.
Like the interviews that he took either preparing for the doc or that he actually featured within the doc. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just like interviews that he took outside of the actual film that we ended up seeing. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like.
And I think he has.
That's very compelling, just people.
He does some of his videos are like kind of instructive where he says, you know, I was trying to get this to happen. This is the way got this interview out of this person. Because he is sort of like trying to tell other people how they can tell stories like this or present stories like this. But what's funny about that is I had seen one of his films like years before and had forgotten about it. And it was just a film of these people square dancing, clog dancing. In a house, they had like pushed all the furniture to the walls and rolled up the rug, and it was just a party. And it was really like, I mean, like technically, you know, you could tell it was like one camera, it was black and white, but it was edited really beautifully to show the story of how many people are in this small space and, you know, the way they all move together, you know, individually, but also as a group, the way that the dance works. It was really cool.
And see, I think that level of artistic, like even that's not necessarily staging it, it's editing, it's how he shot the documentary.
Right.
That level of artistic approach I don't think you'd see in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings me to like what you're saying about what the documentarian brings to it. There's a quote from Community. There's an episode where they're making a documentary, or where one of the characters is making a documentary about, it's basically like Hearts of Darkness, where the dean of the school is trying to make a commercial for the school. And this character named Abed is making a documentary about him doing that. And the dean gets like, he goes crazy. He becomes like the Francis Ford Coppola, where he's like losing his mind over this commercial.
Dysentery, cholera.
Yeah.
Heart attack.
So what Abed says at the end, when he's talking about his own filmmaking, he says documentarians are supposed to be objective to avoid having any effect on the story, and yet we have more effect than anyone because we decide to tell it and we decide how it ends. Mm-hmm. And
I think am that's, God.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Like if any of these, even the stories that are like big, important, you know, significant stories, if it's not for the documentarians, like the OJ thing. I knew about it, but if it wasn't for the documentarian, I would know so much less about it. I would understand so much less about how it was in context with not just the 90s, but the 60s through 90s, like everything about its life and how that all kind of culminated in this moment. I understood so much more, and it's all because the documentarian decided to bring that to the screen. So I think that's really cool. We had a staff pick this week, which I watched for the first time in prep for the show.
If only Themo was here.
What was the staff pick?
So
we're about to find out.
Yeah. So Themo,
I'm assuming it's the one that.
Yeah. So Themo isn't here, years ago we did a list where it was called the top ten movies
of my lifetime.
Yeah, the top 10 movies that were made within Kyle's lifetime, because you're the youngest.
Since '88.
And Themo had King of Kong on his list.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which I'd never seen before until last week. And even though knowing, like, I knew you liked it, I knew Themo loved it, it was still a movie about people playing video games. And I'm like, you know, I'll get to it eventually. But it was so compelling.
What's crazy is just, like, how... What's his name?
Billy?
Yeah, he's not, like... a written character. He's just being himself, and he's like a villain. And I know it's a lot of editing, but he's also just
he is so
horrible.
Right. I think it would be hard to have overplayed him. Like it would have been hard.
You couldn't have edited him to make him look worse. Exactly.
Like he just kind of. It's one of the most amazing characters in America. Clearly,
I mean, I think we talked about it a little.
Get his hot sauce.
The dude, his toady.
Oh my! He was the worst.
He's the worst.
Oh, the ref,
Brian Koo.
No, Brian Koo. So he's a guy who's
kind of ruthless.
Like, he's like a weird, like drooling, obsessed with him.
The part while watching it where I lost my mind. So if people don't know what this is about, it's about
Donkey Kong.
Billy Mitchell is a guy who had the Donkey Kong world record, and there's another dude who was just like. He's a guy who's like maybe OCD or some kind of like they allude to him maybe being a little bit like maybe Asperger's. Yeah. Like,
well, they probably all have Asperger's.
Amazing to me about him is the idea that because he starts playing the game when he's like unemployed, right?
He got laid off. Just this,
I love that, like. Billy Mitchell
comes from a culture where he had been pulling these records since he was a teenager.
Right. Yeah.
And this is a guy who is obsessed with it in this singular moment in his life for all of these clearly very personal reasons that he has going on. Like the scene of him playing and his kid comes in
and he's like, wipe my butt or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. Like it's just an incredible moment of just like, this is the ugliness of ambition and drive and obsession.
But his,
like, this movie says a lot.
But his motivations seem more pure.
Yeah, they're more pure.
Billy's are all like,
because he's evil.
He wants to reach this like higher echelon of video gaming,
one else can.
Yeah. Whereas this guy just wants to be good at something because being good at something is awesome. Mm-hmm. So the part where I lost my mind was the guy named Steve Wiebe. And I love the touch. I don't know if this was real or if this was fictional, but until the end of the movie, everyone pronounces his name wrong. They all call him Weeb until the very end. And once he's finally accepted, somebody interrupts and goes, "Hey, actually it's pronounced Weeby." And I don't know if that's real or not, but I love that touch. Mm. So he's playing the game at this big arcade that's where Billy's from. And he's about to get a kill screen. He's going to like break a record and all these people are going to watch. And one of Billy's friends, gamer buddies.
Oh yeah. Calls him up or something.
He starts going around and getting everyone in the arcade to watch just to unnerf him. Like he does it under the guise of like, "Hey guys, there's a kill screen coming up. You guys want to see a kill screen? It's coming up." But he builds this crowd around this guy. And it's clearly just to like get him off his game. And that guy had no it wasn't even his score that he's like trying to protect. It's just that he's this guy's toady.
Well, that is.
It made me hate him so much.
Well, the thing is, he is trying to protect something though. He's trying to protect his standing in that community.
Because he's only valuable because he's connected to Billy Mitchell.
That's what, to me, is like so great about that documentary. He's like,
it's a really beautiful cross-section of society.
It does everything that we hope documentaries like that would do. Like we were saying earlier, it has this underlying, absolutely universal theme. These are primates. we are primates. Right. Yeah. It was about territory. It was about acceptance. It's about who's going to get left out outside of the cave to starve and be eaten by bears. Like that's
and I think that movie was such a good example of, it seems like it's about Donkey Kong. Like on its surface, it's just about a couple dudes playing a video game.
Yeah.
But it's saying so much more about who they are, about ambition, about using shady means to do things or to screw other people over. Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about having, you know, constructing a narrative. Well, you could make a case that King of Kong constructed a narrative where Steve Wiebe was the good guy and Billy Mitchell was the bad guy. And this was a good against evil. And we really cranked it up for the sake of telling a good story.
Yeah.
Okay. The movie was made, what, like 10, 12 years ago? Mm-hmm. Years later.
The aftermath.
Turns out that Billy Mitchell had been cheating the whole time. Yeah. Yep. He really is a dick. Like, he really is that bad guy.
And there's so many twists and turns with that documentary. Like, there's no way that the people making it could have guessed what was going to happen with the scores and everything going back and forth.
I watched some of the bonus features, and they had a whole other thing where they were following somebody else at the same time playing a different game.
Like another guy. Yeah.
Like, what I think would be really interesting.
And they just compete or something.
I don't know.
Was it the guy who acted like he discovered weightlifting gloves? Who's my personal favorite? He's like, "I found these gloves and they're, you know, my fingers are open." He's like, "But I can do trackballs."
It was somebody who was doing a different game and they're like, "Yeah, it just wasn't as interesting as these guys." Like, they met Steve and Steve is like a compelling character because there's something about him. He just seems like such a nice guy.
Yeah, there's something really like yet almost charismatic about him. And it is that weird drive though. This idea, and it happens when you're at certain low points in your life.
Yeah. You're like, "This is the only thing I got."
They even start like, I think it's
a noir film.
I think they say he
very much so.
He signed off on his house like the day he got laid off or something like that, and you're like, "Oh, this poor fucking guy."
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was really kind of pulled over by the movie.
Like the 30 for 30s that I've watched that are about sports that I've never known a lot about or people that I didn't know anything about. If somebody can make a film that makes me care about a thing that I never cared about before,
right?
Yeah.
That's absolutely a really powerful
action. Well, one of my picks is one of those exact things. It's a documentary that I love so much, and yet, God, I would
the subject matter itself, you never game. Really.
Yeah, we were just talking about wordplay the other day. Like, I don't really care about crossword puzzles, but they make a competition where people do crossword puzzles like against each other, like really interesting, and like they talk about how crosswords are made, and it's like really cool.
Yeah.
People make documentaries about everything.
Yeah. So my final roundtable question to you guys is, if you had
rectangular table.
Right. Yeah. Rhombus table, rhomboid table. If you had to make a documentary, how would you, what type of documentary would you do?
What type? Not specific.
Or like, what about, how would you approach it?
It's quite the question to spring on us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, right. I mean, I've always like, I kind of like the type of documentary that you roll. Kind of like what Mr. Brainwash was doing, where he, except for I'd edit it better, but like where he just followed something and then he'd just mash up all of the footage that he shot of a certain, like my documentary that I'd want to do is just like maybe of a place.
Slice of life.
Yeah.
I have like two ideas in mind. There's a subtype called a city symphony. What's considered, at least by Sight and Sound, to be the best documentary of all time is a Russian documentary called Man with a Movie Camera from 1929.
I've heard of it.
It's interesting and it's short. It's just them going around. I don't know what city it was, but they just go around the city and film stuff that happened in the city. And I think it may all have been on one day, but I'm not positive.
Yeah.
But they just kind of go around and like, here's what was going on, and they cut it together, and it's like a tour of the city. Or there's another one called Apropos de Nice, which is about the French city Nice, and it's the same type of thing. It's like 20 minutes, and it's like, here's some stuff that happened in Nice. Yeah. You could do that for Akron.
Yeah. That's what's nice about a shot like something like that is I am confident in my ability to like show off something. When you factor in people like talking heads and interviewing and like asking questions, and you can write amazing questions, but it's not a guarantee that you're going to get amazing answers.
Yeah.
Like they could answer in like two
they
words.
Could be boring.
Yeah. No, and so, not really.
Yeah.
Which is why for something like that, you need to interview.
Yeah. And so then it turns into
know how to get the reaction you want. Right.
Yeah. Which is a completely different type of thing. So, so for sure. Just, yeah, the slice of life, like moment in time, a day or a week or something. But yeah.
Yeah, I like that city symphony style. While you guys are thinking, I have another one that I can...
we have another question that we're not prepared to answer.
No. I can say another form that I would like to do, because I have a very specific idea. I just don't have the access or resources.
Let's see. I have a few ideas. Fame. I don't know if I'm saying anything wrong.
Yeah.
Hey, you don't really.
Well, you don't have to be too specific. Mine, if someone wants to take this, just give me a thank you at the end. I watched a movie last night called Zidane, A 21st Century Portrait. So Zidane is a French soccer player,
football.
For our across the pond friends.
Well, everybody but us, really.
Yeah. And apparently, I don't follow soccer at all. I asked one of my friends, I was like, give me a good like baseball comparison. And they said he's basically like Alex Rodriguez, only maybe a little bit better and a little bit less of an asshole. So he's evidently great. A little bit less.
He's kind of an asshole.
Like, he's still kind of an asshole.
Okay. I was going to say, like...
No, they said he's an asshole. They said he's an asshole, not A-Rod asshole.
He's a regular asshole.
Yeah. Like, not quite like... A-Rod's like almost peak.
It's up there.
Yeah.
So this movie called Zidane and 21st Century Portrait, they took 17 cameras. It was shot by Darius Kanji, who did Uncut Gems. He does a lot of movies. But this one, they took 17 cameras with 17 different camera operators, and they just shot him. So it's a soccer match and you're just following this one guy around, and it's interesting.
That kind of sounds awesome, actually.
It gets
just one player. Yeah,
it's just one player, and it gets a little bit long. But they'll do things where like the band Mogwai does a score, which is pretty cool. And then every now and then they'll cut in subtitles, and it's supposed to be like of him thinking, and it's him being like philosophical about like the game and soccer. And it's kind of interesting. I wish they would have done that more. And soccer is actually kind of interesting because it ends with him getting ejected for fighting. And then the movie ends. You don't see how the game ends. His team won. I looked it up, but
it wasn't the headbutt incident, was it?
No. Okay. It's just like somebody like pushes one of his teammates or something, and he like gets into it, and he gets kicked out. And then the movie's over.
Yeah.
Then the movie's over. And I thought like doing that for baseball would be terrible. It would be so boring because baseball's not
kinetic
engineered for that at all.
But
LeBron James, a 21st century portrait, would be amazing. Because even just watching him on the bench.
Well, I was just going to say, with baseball, I think baseball would be interesting. Because like even just watching like an outfielder, and then they maybe make a play, and then they go into the dugout, and then they're doing their dugout thing.
Yeah.
You know, putting gum on other people's hats and stuff.
What is the dugout thing?
I mean, well, just
like playing with their friends.
And eating a lot of sunflower seeds, making a mess.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's some characters in the like during the game and stuff. I think it would be
interesting to see that. But like, what's cool, what's good about soccer is that they're always moving, and then basketball, they're always moving. So watching LeBron just like for four quarters.
I'm with Kyle.
Only him.
I actually want to see the opposite. I want to see
The more boring. I think
this is one case where Nick is arguing for something a little more action-packed, and Kyle and Kyle and Sarah are going, maybe something a little slower.
Yeah.
I'm liking this idea.
Could it be in Hungarian?
Mosey around the dugout. Like,
just a guy and a horse for 3 hours.
So anyway, that's my LeBron, a 21st century portrait. Just 17 cameras.
Mike Trout.
Now I'm on board.
Shohei
Ohtani.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or how about a relief pitcher?
I was going to say, what about pitchers?
He's just like, for 8 innings, he's sitting
designated
on the...
designated hitter.
Yeah, a utility infielder who doesn't actually go in the game.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How would you guys want to approach a doc if you were commissioned to make a doc?
I think out of the ones that I picked, which I guess would be the best indicator of what I like watching or what I like seeing, are a specific place and a specific time and a pretty straightforward depiction of what happened in that moment with less of a effort to arrange those events or those responses.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, not drawn out. Like Kyle was talking earlier, you'd have to spend a lot of time with subjects to build up the sense of what your story is going to be. That these are, several of mine are just one day or one moment.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what I tend to go for. But I also really like, the thing that I like about them is, even about those two films, is making me interested or care about something that I previously had no feelings about whatsoever.
Right. What about you, sir? You want to give out all your million-dollar ideas?
Gerald Horn, Chris Cameron, and the guy who does the Revolutions podcast. If you're listening, we're going to make a Ken Burns-style documentary about the Haitian Revolution.
That's the first Ken Burns mention on this episode.
Oh, it won't be the last.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it won't be the last.
Definitely.
So yeah, that would be mine. I mean, that's the best style on earth.
There's an effect named after him.
This is the Ken Burns, right?
It comes on the iMovie.
Yeah.
So that was the rectangle table discussion on documentaries. Do we want to chop this into a two-parter? And before that...
Where are we at time-wise, Kyle?
An hour. Whoa. Do we want to do round two of the JDMF game, X Meets Y?
Well, I think we have to now that you said it out loud.
Well, I think we have to do it in the next episode because there's no way the next episode is going to be an hour.
All right, we'll finish it out in the next episode then. Sir doesn't think that I can drag something on for incredibly long.
Should I cut the recording?
No, we'll
make it easier for you.
No, well,
that was our discussion.
That was our first of the rectangle table discussions. I liked it.
It went all right.
I feel like I learned some things about documentaries. I learned some things about you guys.
That's the dream.
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
I don't know. You can find more about us at facebook.com/onthetropes, twitter.com/onthetropes. You can get some loot at onthetropes.redbubble.com, and you can go to patreon.com/onthetropes. I just uploaded, while recording this episode, I uploaded me talking about my top 100 movies of the 2010s. So you can find that on there if you're curious about what I liked. As always, I'm your host, Nick.
I'm Sir.
Are you sure?
I was yawning right when Nick was doing his.
Eva.
And Kyle.
And join us next week. We'll talk about our top 5 documentaries.
On the Tropes.